Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Heroes, Legends, Histories, and Mysteries Podcast. This is your host, John Hagedorn. Today, I'm taking you to Crete, the largest and most populous of the Greek islands and the fifth largest island in the Mediterranean Sea. It's located 99 miles south of the Greek mainland. Crete is very mountainous and beautiful, with rivers pouring from the highlands to the sea, and the shores littered with coves, inlets, and tiny islands. Its mountains are a source of pride to the Cretan people. Cretans loved their country, which became a Greek state in 1913. The Tourism Friends website at lovingcrete.com features a section called The Amari Valley, The Hidden Diamond, and describes the fertile valley as being an enchanting region perched 1,800 feet above sea and boasting an idyllic climate. It is, indeed, a serene and picturesque valley nestled between the mountains, a hidden treasure waiting to be found. A picture of one of the hillside villages shows a cluster of homes on a hillside covered with olive, apple, and cherry trees, and in the spring, the cherry trees bloom and transform the valley into a sea of white. The valley is watched over by Mount Kidros and Mount Ida. The villages are all connected by a single winding road, and the area remains a hidden gem for the few tourists who come there. There are structures there dating back thousands of years to the first Byzantine period. In Amari, there's an old tavern called the Taverna Arivanis, which has a few rooms for rent and features a terrace offering a breathtaking view of the Amari Valley. The Kidros villages are located on the western flank of the Amari Valley. On August 22nd of 1944, during the throes of World War II, the German forces of occupation torched every village and detonated the houses. The inhabitants were mercilessly shot, sparing no one. Most believe the murders were a reprisal for the abduction of General Cripe, the German commander kidnapped by Greek partisans and the British SOE, known as the Special Operations Executive. Those who believe otherwise say that the murders were a cover-up for the German withdrawal from the island. And they say that German reprisals generally took place immediately after the fact. But the burning of Kidros villages took place 4 months after the kidnapping of General Cripe. More on that story going forward. In his book, The Creation Runner, George Psychoindakis tells how he observed the fires raging in the Kidros villages for an entire week from a cave high on Mount Ida. It was a scene of total horror and devastation. The villages today have their own memorials to the dead, the most moving of them being the grand statue outside the village of Enomeros. The statue shows a woman painstakingly etching the names of the deceased men, women, and children of her village into stone. The Holocaust of Kidros was one of the many German war crimes that will never be forgotten. When Germany and neighboring Italy declared war on Greece and invaded Greece in 1941, the Greek island of Crete was the last to fall. It was bombed and strafed and attacked from the air, and Germany finally sent 10,000 paratroopers to invade it, 4,000 of whom were killed by defenders of the island.
This is the Gaumont British News, presenting the world to the world. These are the first newsreel pictures received in this country of the gallant fight made by the small empire army against the invading hordes of Nazis in Greece. Nobody would wish to pretend it was a victory, but we fulfilled our obligation to help our gallant Balkan ally in its lone stand. We inflicted heavy casualties on the enemy. And in this sparring preliminary, our commanders and our men have got the measure of the German army. This brief record of one small episode in that fierce battle shows supplies and reinforcements going into the Allied positions. And they show that our men were undismayed. This was some of the civilian population of Greece during those dark days. Simple peasants who are a shining example that we may do well to follow. Helping the Allied army, staying put and carrying on while the soldiers go about their business. Greece knows now the things that we know too, the desolation and ruin caused by war. But Greece too will share Britain's triumph in the end. Over the heads of the Empire troops, the Nazi bombers roared without pause. They had achieved local superiority in the air. It was the kind of work in which the Nazis excel, bombing when there is no British fighter to challenge them. It points the moral once again that we must have more planes, more pilots, more instructors, more aerodromes. This was the hell that was later repeated over the island of Crete. Many German planes were shot down from the ground, but in the sky, the planes you see were always German. Greece retells the story whose chapters have blazed periodically upon our newsreel screen since Hitler came to power. But in all these conquered countries living in the shadow today, the passionate will for freedom will never die. Today, Hitler is the master of the continent of Europe. Tomorrow, these victims of German greed will exact a terrible revenge.
The people of Crete were to be the objects of German occupation and hatred for 5 long years. They were mercilessly hunted down and killed. Their relatives were murdered, and those who were not murdered were sent to German prison camps. If there was one bright moment for the Greek resistance amidst the horrors of World War II, it was the commando-inspired kidnapping of Lieutenant General Kripe, the German commander of all forces in Crete, that inspired the Greek partisans. We'll tell this story first, and then lay out the hard times that Greece and its beautiful island of Crete and its people suffered under German occupation. This story hasn't been told that often and deserves telling. The kidnapping of Heinrich Kripe was an operation executed jointly by the British Special Operations Executive, SOE, and local resistance members in Crete in German-occupied Greece during the Second World War. The operation was launched on February 4, 1944, when SOE officer Patrick Lay Fermer landed in Crete with the intention of abducting notorious war criminal and commander of 22nd Air Landing Division, Friedrich Wilhelm Müller. By the time of the arrival of the rest of the abduction team, led by William Stanley Moss, 2 months later, Müller had been succeeded by Heinrich Kripe, who was chosen as the new target. The idea to kidnap General Müller was hatched by 2 young officers in Britain's SOE over cocktails in Cairo in September of 1943. For Captain Stanley Moss, who had just turned 18, it was a chance for some action. For Major Patrick Lee Fermer, age 20, there was a deeper motivation. He had been on Crete during the German invasion in 1941, been evacuated, and then returned for 17 months as an SOE agent with the Crete resistance, and during that time got to witness firsthand General Mueller's savagery against the Crete people. I need to give you a little background before we tell the story. Greece entered the Second World War on the side of the Allies following an Italian invasion into Greece from Albania on October 28, 1940. Italy and Bulgaria had joined with Hitler. That would change in 1943 for Italy, but for now, that was bad news for Greece. The following year, 1941, on April 6th, Nazi Germany launched an invasion of its own from Bulgaria known as Operation Merida. Athens, Greece, was occupied on April 28th, and the resistance on the Greek mainland had ceased by the 30th. King George II and his government had left the Greek mainland for Crete 5 days earlier. Crete was in turn attacked by a huge Nazi airborne invasion on May 20th, 1941. The Germans prevailed after 7 brutal days of fighting, forcing an Allied withdrawal to Egypt. The invasion cost Germany the loss of 4,000 German soldiers. With the conclusion of Operation Merida, Greece was subjected to a triple occupation by Germany, Italy, and Bulgaria. Crete, now called Fortress Crete, was shared between Germany and Italy. The Germans occupied the western 3 prefectures of the island with their headquarters in Chania, whilst the Italians occupied the easternmost prefecture of Lasithi. It did not take long for the Cretan resistance to spring up. They assisted Allied soldiers stranded on the island in evading capture and helped them escape to the British-controlled Middle East. The escapees helped establish contact between the SOE branch Cairo and Cretan resistance organizations. supplied with wireless sets and augmented by SOE's stay-behind operatives, they began coordinating their actions with the Allied command. Following the surrender of Italy to the Allies in September of 1943, Angelico Carta, the commander of the Italian 51st Infantry Division, decided to side with the Allies. Evading German patrols and observation planes, he embarked on an SOE motor torpedo boat at South Soro, reaching Mersa Matra the next afternoon, on September 23, 1943. British officers had considered the idea of capturing a senior German officer as early as November 1942, when an SOE agent on Crete named Zan Fielding proposed seizing the island's chief military governor at the time, Alexandre André. When André was posted away, his successor, Bruno Brouwer, was targeted for capture. None of these plans were carried out, however. Carta's successful escape to Egypt rekindled the idea of abducting the chief military commander of Crete. In 1943, Captain William Stanley Moss, a recent SOE recruit, and Major Patrick Lee Firmer, an officer of SOE Cairo's Cretan desk, hatched a plan for the abduction of General Friedrich Wilhelm Müller, then commander of the 22nd Air Landing Division. Müller had gained a reputation for brutality and was despised by the Cretan people, being responsible for mass executions, torture, the razing of villages, and conscripting civilians into labor units. The SOE planned to kidnap him while keeping the use of violence at a minimum and transport him to Egypt, thus giving a morale boost to the Cretans. At least that was what was hoped. Lee Firmer submitted the plan to the commander of the SOE in the Middle East, Brigadier Carl Verbarker Benfield. The plan received widespread support in SOE's Cairo branch, with Special Operations Committee senior executive Bickham Sweet Escott being the only one to oppose it. Sweet Escott argued that the benefit of raising the morale of the Cretan resistance was significantly outweighed by the high risk of German reprisals. Just as with Operation Market Garden, if you recall, the voice of reason was ignored. In September of 1943, Barker Benfield approved the plan, and the operation was set in motion. In late 1943, Lee Firmer and Moss formed a squad with two Cretan resistance members, Georgios Tarakis and Emmanuel Paterakis, who were to accompany them in their mission. After undergoing training at an SOE camp in Ramat David, Palestine, and facing numerous delays, the team flew to the headquarters of the British 8th Army in Bari on January 4, 1944. A month later, they boarded a bomber at the Brindisi airport, which was to transport them to Crete's Kataro Plateau. But the drop zone over the Lashidi Plain was so small that only one agent at a time could drop. Lee Firmer was the only one airdropped, and a sudden weather change caused the area to be obscured by clouds as the Wellington was making a wide circle for the next drop, and it had to head back to Egypt. Lee Firmer was greeted by Cretan resistance members and SOE Captain Sandy Rendell, while the rest of the squad returned to Cairo. While hiding in a cave above the village of Tepai in the Lasithi Mountains, Lee Firmer reestablished old contacts and learned that Müller had been replaced by Major General Heinrich Kripe on March 1. By March 30th, Lee Firmer informed the Cretan section of the SOE Cairo about Müller's replacement, simultaneously signaling his intent to carry out the operation. Although Lee Firmer knew little about Kripe, he insisted that the capture of a high-ranking German officer was sufficient to raise the morale of both the Cretans and SOE's Greek section. The rest of the team attempted to parachute into Crete 7 more times without success. After 2 months, on April 4th, they arrived by motor launch at Sutsura on Crete's southern coast. The team then moved to a cave system in the mountains above Castamonicida village, the hideout of a local resistance group. The SOE team was joined by Antonios and Grigorios, Mikhail, Mickey, Akomianakis, and Grigorios Chnarakis. Mickey Akomianakis' house was located across the road from Kripe's residence, the Villa Ariadne, in the village of Knossos. His father had died fighting the German invaders just months before. Lee Firmer disguised himself as a Cretan shepherd for his trip to Knossos. After traveling by bus with Akomianakis, he reconnoitered the vicinity of the villa. Enclosed by a triple-wire barrier, one of which was rumored to be electrified, and guarded by a sizable garrison, it was deemed too well fortified for a direct assault. it was decided to seize Cripe during one of his frequent trips from his residence to his divisional headquarters in Anoarkanis, some 5 miles away. Surveying the route, they discovered a T-junction where the road from Arcanis joined the main road to Heraklion, forcing cars to slow down to almost a standstill. The location was subsequently named Point A. The owner of a small cottage outside Skalani, some 20 minutes' travel time from the abduction point, agreed to collaborate, turning the building into an observation point. Owing to the heavy traffic on the main road, the operation had to be undertaken at night. Akumianaka supplied the team with 2 Feldgendarmerie summer uniforms, complete with rank insignia for a corporal, campaign badges, sidearms, and a traffic policeman's stick. Athanasakis set up an observation post on a height overlooking the German headquarters, signaling whenever Kripe left the building. 4 more resistance members, Evstratios Sevialakis, Dimitrios Zakadikis, Nikolas Komis, and Antonius Wadakis, were recruited as guides. Shortly before the abduction was to take place, the team received a letter from a local commander of the pro-communist Greek People's Liberation Army, known as ELAS, E-L-A-S, who threatened to betray them to the authorities if they did not vacate the area. Lee Fermer replied with an ambiguously written note, and the ELAS commander did not carry out his threat. The operation was postponed for several days, as the general did not leave his residence. The first 3 attempts to kidnap the general failed when Kripe unexpectedly returned before dark. A 4th attempt was thwarted by rain. But on the night of April 26, 1944, Lee Fermer and Moss received a signal that the general had got into his car. Changing into the German uniforms, they followed Savialakis to Point A. Lee Fermer and Moss hid in a ditch on the east side of the road. Further to the west, Zvidakis, the Papa Leonidas brothers, Tarakis, and Comus lay in wait. At 9:30 p.m., Zatsadakis flashed his torch 3 times, signaling that Kripe's car was approaching unescorted. Lee Fermer and Moss blocked the road, and as the car came closer, Moss waved his policeman's stick and shouted, "Halt!" in German. When the car stopped, Lee Fermer requested that identity papers be shown. As Kripe reached for his pocket, Lee Fermer jacked the door open, while simultaneously pressing his automatic weapon against Kripe's chest. The rest of the team sprung up and surrounded the car. A brief struggle ensued, which ended when Paterakis tied Kripe, and Moss struck the driver on the head with his kosh, knocking him unconscious. Moss took up the driver's seat, and Lee Fermer impersonated the general, with Kripe, Savialakis, Tarakis, and Paterakis in the back seat, driving off to Heraklion. The rest cleared the spot of signs of struggle and also headed to Heraklion with the driver. The car passed through 22 checkpoints in Heraklion, coming into the road to Rethymno and stopping outside a steep mountain track leading to Anosia. Kripe's penchant for being impatient at roadblocks and acting rudely to the people manning them had made him unpopular among his subordinates, contributing to the success of his kidnapping as the car sped through the checkpoints without stopping. Lee Fermer drove to the hamlet of Heliana, where he abandoned the car. To prevent reprisals against the area's population, he left a note claiming that British Special Forces had conducted the operation without any local support and scattered incriminating evidence. The team then ascended to Anosia, where they rested for a few hours. Late in the afternoon of April 27th, a German reconnaissance aircraft dropped leaflets onto the village threatening reprisals if the general was not returned within 3 days. They soon departed for Mount Ida, where they were met by a band of resistance men led by Michael Zaloris and the SOE officers attached to them. The breakdown of their wireless station meant that all communication had to be conducted by runners, hindering the evacuation. The next day, the team was informed that the Cretans had murdered Kripe's driver as he was too stunned to walk at the necessary pace for the rebels to avoid capture. The team continued its ascent on Ida, where they stayed with another Cretan resistance group. In an effort to spare the Cretan people from reprisals, Lee Fermer left the note with the car. To the German authorities in Crete, "Gentlemen, your divisional commander, General Kripe, was captured a short time ago by a British raiding force under our command. By the time you read this, he will be on his way to Cairo. We would like to point out most emphatically that this operation was carried out without the help of Cretans or Cretan partisans, that the only guides used were serving soldiers of His Hellenic Majesty's forces in the Middle East who came with us. Your general is an honorable prisoner of war and will be treated with all considerations owing to his rank. Any reprisals against the local population will be wholly unwarranted and unjust. Auf baldiges Wiedersehen, which means see you again soon. He added a postscript. We are very sorry to have to leave this beautiful car behind. As further proof, he left a British commando beret, cigarettes, and an Agatha Christie paperback. But the Germans were not fooled, and reprisals did come. One can easily say that the letter was naive and that the plan was impetuous, simply meaning there was a failure to understand the consequences of their actions. The Germans were already known to have committed numerous reprisals and acts of barbarism. The kidnapping of a German general would only give them an excuse for more. As the team continued their journey from Ida to the Amari Valley, Crete's garrison of over 30,000 men had been placed on alert, and Axis troops began to assemble around the mountain range in an attempt to block their escape. After crossing the valley, they reached the village of Agia Paraskevi. A report transmitted by the BBC had alerted the Germans that Cripe had yet to leave the island. Rumors of a general uprising and an Allied invasion had prompted Brouwer to strengthen Chania's garrison and continue the security sweeps. Cripe's aide-de-camp and guards were arrested on suspicion of complicity. The arrival of a runner enabled the abduction team to request that a boat be sent to Sactoria on May 2nd. Their runner unexpectedly did not return the following day, and the party was informed that Sactoria and other hotbeds of resistance had been destroyed by German troops. Moss and Lee Fermer set off to the Amari Valley in search of a wireless station. On May 5th, they reached the village of Pantanassa, where they were able to send and receive written messages once again. A day later, dispatch runner George Psychoundicus brought SOE officer Dick Barnes and a wireless set to the village. In the meantime, the rest of the party evaded a German patrol by moving to Patsos, just 2 hours away from Pantanassa. It then became known that a unit of the Special Boat Service, SBS, led by George Jellicoe, was to land at Limni Beach on May 9th to assist with the evacuation. Moss and Lee Fermer rendezvoused with the rest of the abduction team at the hamlet of Carines and advanced to Fontenot and then Villadredo. Once a 200-man German column came to Argigopoli, just an hour's distance from Villadredo. Dennis Kliquatira and a band of Elas fighters assisted the team in avoiding their pursuers. The procession heading down one mountain path was filled with partisans and peasants cheering triumphantly as the German general, tied to a mule, was led down the slope, according to an article titled Commando Kidnapping, Capturing General Cripe on Crete, by John W. Osborne, written May of 2011. Osborne, at the end of that article, mentions, erroneously, I believe, that the Germans in the end took no reprisals. In part two, I'll reveal exactly what the Germans did in the days, weeks, and months following the kidnapping of General Cripe. When the team reached Azagonia, a runner told him that the boat was going to pick them up at Rodokino Beach on the night of May 14th. The Rodokiniad guerrillas accompanied the team on their final trek. The team, Cripe, two German prisoners of war, and a sick Soviet prisoner of war boarded the SBS boats at 10 p.m., concluding their mission by landing at Mersa Matra in Egypt in 1944. Major Lee Fermer was awarded the Distinguished Service Order and Captain Moss the Military Cross for their outstanding display of courage and audacity during the operation. The awards were announced July 13th of 1944. Following his interrogation, Cripe was transferred to Calgary in Canada, where he was interned with other captured German generals until 1947. The operation dealt a blow to Axis morale on the island and raised that of local resistance, as the BBC and Royal Air Force praised the operation's success through radio broadcast and leaflet drops, respectively. The wisdom of the abduction came into question as Cripe was characterized as anti-Nazi by his interrogator. Despite his position, he possessed very little information of value to British intelligence, and by the time of his capture, Crete was a backwater. On August 8, 1944, a German punitive expedition sent against the village of Anagia was ambushed by Moss and Michael Exlorus's band. The Damasta sabotage, as this became known, resulted in the death of 30 German soldiers, 12 of whom were murdered after surrendering. Mueller, who had returned to his role of commander of Fortress Crete, was determined to penalize the inhabitants of Anagia for providing shelter to the Kripe abduction team and their role in the Damasta sabotage. The British historian Alan Ogden saw the order of the day to destroy Anagia as specific and retrospective, confirming British fears of mass reprisals. The Holocaust of Kidros was an operation involving 2,000 Axis soldiers who targeted Anagia and Damasta. It was obviously an ordered reprisal attack. A total of 900 houses were burned. 50 civilians were shot, and 3,500 became internally displaced. In the following days, the operation expanded to other villages. Men were executed. Houses were looted and then burned or dynamited, regardless of their involvement in resistance activities. Local resistance bands could do nothing but watch, being vastly outnumbered. These events were portrayed in Moss's 1950 semi-autobiographical book, Ill Met by Moonlight, The Abduction of General Kripe. In 1957, the book was turned into a film by the same name, Ill Met by Moonlight, starring Dirk Bogarde, David Oxley, and Marius Goring. Lee Fermor and Psycho Undakis also recounted their experiences in their respective biographical works, Abducting a General, The Kripe Operation, and Psycho Undakis' version, The Cretan Runner, His Story of the German Occupation. We'll return with World War II hell in Crete, Nazi war crimes, right after these sponsor messages. At dawn, August 22, 1944, 4 months after the kidnapping of Lieutenant General Kripe, several battalions of German infantry, presumably belonging to the 16th Regiment of the 22nd Luftland Infantry Division, arrived at the Amari Valley. They succeeded in surrounding the villages lining the western side of the Amari Valley without being noticed by their dwellers. These villages are collectively called the Kidros Villages, namely Gerikari, Georgiouthi, Kardaki, Vrisis, Smils, Dryges, Anomeros, and Kordaki. The nearby village of Kriavrisi was also surrounded. In all villages, the German raids followed roughly the same pattern. The locals were gathered together. The identities of males were verified, and those to be executed were picked and kept separately. Women were ordered to return to their homes and collect their valuables, on the excuse that they would go on a long journey. This was a ruse to facilitate the looting that would follow. Women, children, and the elderly were taken away, while the men whose lives were spared were forced to march towards Rethymno, where they were held in Forteza for a few weeks. Following their departure, firing squads started the executions in groups. When finished, dead bodies were doused in petrol and set on fire. In some cases, the executions were carried out in a village house which was afterwards dynamited, such as in Gerikari, Vrisis, and Anomeros. In the days following the shootings, village homes were looted and then burned or dynamited, like in Kandinos 3 years earlier. The looted property was collected at Sholi Asomaton and transported by lorries to Rethymno. Harvests and livestock were confiscated for use by the German troops. Local resistance bands could do nothing but watch, being vastly outnumbered. Many accounts of the destruction of the Kidros villages adopt the official German narrative and seek to attribute it to the residents having provided shelter to Kripe's abductors. This is disputed by some historians, as the abduction had taken place almost 4 months earlier, on April 26, 1944, and the standard German practice, they thought, as it turns out erroneously, was to implement immediate reprisals. Another explanation is that the Germans destroyed Kidros to terrorize the local population and reduce the risk of being attacked during their impending retreat, which eventually started in early October. In historian Beaver's words, the Amari operation was essentially a campaign of preemptive terror just before the German forces withdrew westwards from Heraklion with their flank exposed to this center of Cretan resistance. It's possible that German intelligence took a thorough 4 months to determine the whereabouts and the identities of the kidnappers and those who supported them. And once that was determined, they then torched the Kidros villages. But they didn't stop there. The massacre at Kokinia, coming up, also was a reprisal which took 4 months for the Germans to plan. At dawn on September 11, 1944, a local Elas detachment, again, ELAS standing for the Greek People's Liberation Army, which was a huge army of Greek partisans who lived in the mountains and who wanted revenge against the Germans, as well as the freedom of their people. And they are also worthy of a story. Surrounded Sholi Asamaton and captured the garrison of the German outpost established there. Later the same morning, two lorries carrying German troops sent from Rethymno were ambushed at the watershed ridge near the village of Ag Apostoli. The battle that followed became known as the Battle of Potomoy. It continued during the following day as German reinforcements arrived. The Battle of Potomoy ended with ELAS victory. 20 to 30 Germans were killed, and others captured alive. By the way, German General Mueller was captured by the Red Army in East Prussia and later extradited to Greece. He was tried in Athens along with Bruno Brauer, commander of the Festung Kreta between 1942 and 1944, for the atrocities committed on the island. Both were convicted, sentenced to death on December 9, 1946, and executed by firing squad on May 20, 1947. The anniversary of the destruction of the villages of Kidros is commemorated with events held by turns in a different village every year. If you search German war crimes in Greece, you'll come up with over 50 massacres and crimes of every stripe committed by the whole gamut of German military, from the Luftwaffe to the Wehrmacht to the Waffen-SS. It's no wonder that the Greek resistance is said to have numbered 80,000 men and women guerrillas. Some examples of Nazi war crimes, so you don't think I'm glossing over the crimes. The executions of Cocaina took place on August 17, 1944, and was the largest Nazi roundup and one of the largest-scale war crimes perpetrated during the German occupation of Greece. The occupation was carried out by members of the Luftwaffe and collaborationist security battalions and involved the execution of hundreds of civilians, mostly partisans, thousands of hostages being sent to concentration camps, and the burning down of entire house blocks, as well as significant atrocities. The massacre was partly in retaliation for the Germans' defeat in the Battle of Cocaina 5 months before, in March of 1944. The leaders and members of the security battalions involved in the killings were never convicted by the Greek state. Greece, as a whole, suffered greatly from the German occupation. Its story is rarely told. In the short period of German occupation, 1941 to 1944, the violence of the German-led armies of the conquest turned Greece from a modestly well-to-do country to a country literally on the brink of death. The following stories of mass starvation and murder tells the story. The numbers come from the sacrifices of Greece in the Second World War, a 1946 report prepared for the Greek government by the architect K. A. Daxiatis. The story of World War II Greece starts with food, the weapon of starvation for the occupiers. From 1941 to 44, there was a dramatic decline in Greek food production, wheat and barley, life and death crops for the Greeks, which dropped by 40%, beans 36%, tobacco 89%, cotton 75%, olive oil 16%, grapes and raisins 66%, wine 50%, fruits 20%. The occupiers speeded Greek starvation by killing the peasants' farm animals. They slaughtered 60% of the horses, mules, and cattle, 50% of the donkeys, sheep, and goats, 80% of the hogs, and 50% of the chickens. Next, after food, the entire country became a field of desolation for the Germans, Italians, and Bulgarians. They destroyed 25% of the country's forests, 56% of the roads, 50 to 90% of the bridges, 65% of the automobiles, 60% of the trucks, 80% of the buses, 100% of the trains and railways, 80% of the factories, 100% of the water and sewage infrastructure. The 1946 report says, principal harbors were blown up. Installations, machinery, and quays were destroyed. The Germans also blew up the strategic Corinth Canal. In addition, the Germans sank 74% of the Greek ships and destroyed 100% of telephone communications. The Germans bombed all major Greek cities, inflicting heavy damage. According to the 1946 study, the whole country lies in ruins. From northern Epirus to the Dodecanese, large and small buildings, churches, schools, hospitals, and dwellings have been transformed into a mass of tragic ruins. The countryside had a similar fate. According to the 1946 study, the occupying forces applied a systematic plan for the destruction of Hellenism, the burning of villages. 1,770 Greek villages lie in ashes. In certain parts of the country, particularly near the frontiers, destruction by fire reached the proportion of 90% of the villages of every region. The Germans and their allies killed or were responsible for the death of 13% of the entire Greek population. In 1940, there were 7,335,000 people in Greece. By 1944, that population had fallen to 6,805,000 persons. That's a loss of over 500,000 people in 4 years. The report notes that the favorable methods of mass murder included hangings, massacres, shootings, and death vans. The genocidal effects of German occupation of Greece reached a macabre climax in June of 1944. On June 10th of that year, Greek partisans killed a few German soldiers near Destomo, a small village near Parnassus in Delphi. The Germans retaliated with crusading ferocity. Hundreds of soldiers advanced toward Destomo, spreading death on their way, shooting people and animals. Once in the village, the Germans acted with a mania for death and criminality rarely matched in history. They kept shooting anyone on sight. But eventually, they put the annihilation of Destomo into action. They attacked all female children and women, and I literally can't and won't say the maniacal devastation they caused them. In some instances, they strangled the women with their own guts. The German soldiers cut the throats of all infants. The Germans then shot or hanged all boys and men. In fact, they used bayonets to crucify men on trees lining the streets. All this mayhem took the Germans an entire day. The next day, they came back to Destomo and filled their trucks with looted goods from the homes of the dead peasants. A Swedish Red Cross worker stationed in Athens, Sture Lehner, witnessed the results of the German atrocity. In his book, My Odyssey, he admits he drove a truck full of food to Destomo. It was June 14th, 1944. He entered a village in flames, empty of life, utterly destroyed. The picture could have matched Dante's Inferno. Lehner visited Destomo in November of 1944 when the Germans were withdrawing from Greece. Greek partisans surrounded a detachment of German soldiers near Destomo. Lehner drove a truck full of food. A priest and a Greek military commander met him near the village. The priest said both Greeks and Germans were starving, but he urged Lehner to feed the defeated Germans because they had a long way to reach home. Lehner's Greek wife burst into tears. Two executive orders issued at the highest levels of the Third Reich played an important role in the Greek Holocaust. The first, issued by Hitler himself, was the torching directive, according to which, if there was a suspicion that a residence was used by the resistance, that building was a legitimate target for burning, regardless of the possibility that the majority of the inhabitants might be noncombatants. The second order, signed by Marshal Wilhelm Keitel on September 16, 1941, specified that for every German killed, a minimum of 100 hostages would be executed, and for every wounded German, 50 would die. The first mass executions took place in Crete, even before the island fell to the Germans. In 1945, under the auspices of the United Nations, a four-member committee headed by Nikos Kazantzakis was given the task to investigate Axis atrocities in Crete. The Kazantzakis report enumerates the destruction of more than 106 Cretan villages and many, many massacres. The area around the Agios prison in the Hania area was found hiding several mass graves. The first mass murder was recorded in the village Galatas near Hania, where the villagers had dared defend their birthplace from the invading Germans. On May 26, 1941, while the battle was still raging, the Germans murdered old men and women in their homes and looted and burned the village. One of the massacres that Kazantzakis' committee did not report was the murder of all men in Kantamari. That massacre was immortalized for posterity by Peter Wexler, a German officer whose photographs graphically described the executions. An even worse fate befell the village of Kandanos, whose men and women had fought the Germans in order to allow hundreds of Allied troops to escape the paratroopers by reaching safely the south shore of Crete. In Kantanos, all men and women were murdered. Among those executed was Kostas Arkakis, aged 103, and two 80-year-old women who were thrown into their burning homes to endure horrible deaths. These massacres were only the beginning. On October 20, 1941, in Ano and Kado, Kyrdylia, in Macedonia, the Germans gathered 222 men ages 15 to 60, ordered them to excavate a mass tomb, executed them under the gaze of their families, and then burned the villages. In October of 1941, in Messevuno of Ptolemy, they executed 165 men and then burned the village. The next day, in the area of Kilkis, they executed 96 men and then burned the villages of Kleisto, Kidonia, and Ampelavito. Those massacres were carried out solely in order to intimidate the population. The massacres continued through 1942 and intensified in 1943, when the Greek resistance, obeying orders from the Middle East Allied headquarters, intensified their activities against the occupation forces. That was part of the Allied strategy, aimed to convince the Germans that a landing on the Greek shores was forthcoming, whereas their plan was to land on Sicily. Remember the story we just did recently of the body that was planted on a Spanish beach, a body with papers on it, indicating that the Allies would soon be invading Greece? That's what that's all about. On July 26, 1943, the Germans massacred 154 people in Musiotica of Epirus and burned the village. On August 16th, the day after one of the greatest holy days of the Eastern Orthodox Church, the Germans, also in Epirus, destroyed the village Comino. There had been no incident to incite that massacre, only a suspicion that there were guerrillas in its vicinity. This particular massacre, in Comino, has been studied by historians in some detail because there were survivors who managed to escape by swimming the fast waters of Arathos River, or by hiding in the forested area bordering the village. In Comino, the Germans murdered 145 men, 174 women, and 97 children, 414 people in all. 20 families were wiped out completely, and 17 people drowned trying to cross the Arathos to save their lives. Some of you old-timers might remember the name Kurt Waldheim, who reported that massacre to Berlin from his position in Thessaloniki, and reported only the 145 men who were killed, neglecting to mention the women and children, and falsified facts by citing explosions of large quantities of munitions, which never took place. Eventually, Kurt Waldheim became Secretary General of the United Nations and President of Austria. More than 90 Holocausts have taken place in Greece, in which the majority of the inhabitants were murdered. In addition, 1,700 to 1,800 villages, as previously said, were burned, many of them to dust. The Germans developed the act of destruction to the level of a fine art. They spread the condemned structures with incendiary powders, which under fire from a gun or a pistol, exploded into flames. They also developed a military vocabulary to match their unparalleled ingenuity of destruction. The elimination of a population, as in Comino, was a cleanup operation. Waldheim was well trained in spin. He talked about Comino as being a purging operation. The troops charged to carry out the systematic looting of Greek households and farms were called the cleanup troops. The stealing of Greek property was carried out under orders by the highest command of the Wehrmacht. The story of the Greek Holocaust would not be complete without mentioning Kalavrida, Distomo, Hortiati, and Agios Georgios. In Kalavrida, 1,100 men 12 to 90 years old were executed on a gently sloping cornfield outside the town, while the women and young children of the village were held in a schoolhouse, which was then set afire. The women broke the doors down and escaped death, but the male population was killed in the largest one-day atrocity that ever occurred in a non-Slavic land. The date was December 13, 1943. That massacre took place as a revenge for the killing of 70 German prisoners of war by the ELAS. But the Calabretans were not responsible for that act, and in fact, they had tried hard to safeguard the German prisoners that the guerrillas kept in their city. All the villages in the vicinity of Calavrida were destroyed, and their inhabitants were murdered. the monks at the nearby Megaspeleo Historic Monastery, as well as the monks in Agia Labra, where the Greek Revolution of 1821 was first declared, were also murdered. The Germans killed everyone they came across as they moved from one village to the other. The massacre was ordered by German General Karl von Lesueur, who later surrendered his 49th Mountain Division to the Soviets. He would die in 1954 in a Soviet prison. And when we end this article, we'll also talk about the fates of some of the other commanders, the fates that we know of. The historical archives at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Athens are replete with accounts of massacres perpetrated throughout Greece. A little while ago, we mentioned the Red Cross driver, the Swede, Sture Linner, who wrote about the massacre of Destomo, the aftermath of which he and his wife had witnessed. He wrote in his book, My Odyssey, "We were married on June 14th, that would be Sture Linner and his wife Cleo. Emil Santrum, chair of the Greek committee, organized a wedding banquet for the occasion. Late in the evening, he approached me and pulled me aside to a corner, away from the laughs and voices, to talk privately. He showed me a telegram he had just received. The Germans had been slaughtering for 3 days the people of Destomo, near Delphi, and then they burned the village down. If there were any survivors, they would be in need of immediate assistance. Destomo was in the region of my responsibility for the supply of food and medicines. I passed on the telegram to Cleo to read. She winked, and we immediately departed discreetly from our wedding festivity. About an hour later, we were on our way in the darkness of the night. It took several agonizing hours to travel the ravaged roads and pass several roadblocks. It was dawn by the time we finally reached the main road that led to Destomo. Vultures were rising slowly and hesitantly at a low height from the sides of the road when they heard us coming. For hundreds of yards along the road, human bodies were hanging from every tree, pierced with bayonets. Some were still alive. They were the villagers, who were punished this way. They were suspected of providing help to the guerrillas of the region, who had ambushed an SS unit. The odor was unbearable. In the village, the last remnants of the houses were still burning. Hundreds of dead bodies of people of all ages, from elderly to newborn, were strewn around on the dirt. Several women were slaughtered with bayonets. It seemed as if no one had survived. But there, an old man at the end of the village. He had miraculously survived the slaughter. He was shocked by the horror around him. With an empty gaze, his utterances incomprehensible. We descended in the midst of the disaster and yelled in Greek, "Red Cross! Red Cross! We came to help." From the distance, a woman approached with hesitation. She told us that only a handful of villagers managed to escape before the attack had begun. Together with her, we started searching for them. It was after we had set off in this search that we realized she was shot in the hand. We operated on her immediately with Cleo performing the surgery. It was our honeymoon. Not long after this horrific massacre, our connection with Destomo would conclude with this remarkable epilogue. When the German occupation forces were forced to leave Greece after the defeat of Nazi Germany, things did not go as planned for them. A German unit was surrounded by guerrillas exactly in the same area, at Destomo. I thought that this might be taken by the Greeks as an opportunity for a bloody revenge, especially when considering that for quite a while the region had been cut off from any food. I loaded with food necessities a few lorries. I wired to Destomo word of our planned arrival, and we found ourselves on the same road, once again, Cleo and I. When we reached the outskirts of the village, we were met by a committee led by the elderly priest. He was an old-fashioned patriarch with a long, wavy white beard. Next to him, the guerrilla captain, fully armed, stood. The priest spoke first and thanked us on behalf of everybody for the food supplies. Then he added, "We are all starving here, both us and the German prisoners. Now, though we are famished, we are at least in our land. The Germans have not just lost the war. They are also far from their country. Give them the food you have with you. They have a long way ahead." At this phrase, Cleo turned her eyes to me. I suspected what she wanted to tell me with that look, but I could not see clearly any more. I was just standing there, weeping. Back to our story. As for German officers who were punished for war crimes in Greece, including Crete, here's what I found. Fritz Schubert, Bruno Brauer, and General Friedrich Wilhelm Müller. Schubert was a Greek and Turkish-speaking German asset who appeared in Crete in 1941 and was handed a regional command of pro-Nazi Cretans, mainly from the Tassoulis family, from the village of Krasonis. And not only pro-Nazi Cretans, but convicted criminals, a band of men which turned into a sadistic killing unit. Cretans nicknamed him the Turk, among other things. Schubert and his murderers and rapists were the perfect choice for the Nazi command. When they needed really over-the-top slaughter, they could turn Schubert and his minions loose on the civilian population and wipe their hands of the responsibility. Bruno Brauer gave Schubert license to do whatever he pleased. When the resistance found out about Schubert's group of sadists, which didn't take long, the Germans had to provide a large Wehrmacht force to protect their chosen killers from partisan guerrillas. Finally, Brauer had to transfer Schubert out of Crete to Macedonia. Half of Schubert's twisted group stayed with him. The other half joined Georgios Palos, another Nazi collaborator who formed the Palos Death Squad. He led the massacre at Gnitsa in 1944, killing 100 civilians. Colonel Palos surrendered to the 7th Army later, and the U.S. 7th Army later surrendered Palos' captured unit to Greece, after which Palos was executed in Athens for war crimes in 1947. Brauer was also charged with war crimes, along with General Müller. Brauer, who you remember had replaced the kidnapped General Kreip, was convicted for the death of 3,000 Cretans, massacres, systematic terrorism, deportation, pillage, wanton destruction, torture, and ill treatment, and was executed by a firing squad on May 20, 1947, the anniversary of the Axis invasion of Crete. Müller, known as the Butcher of Crete, who had replaced Brauer, and who had ordered the mass reprisals for the kidnapping of General Kreip, was executed the same day. At least there was some retribution. Never forget. Thanks for joining us at 1001 Heroes, Legends, Histories, and Mysteries. This is your host, John Hagedorn. This year, on June 6th, we'll remember the Normandy invasion, which took place 80 years ago and led to the ultimate downfall of the German army. There are so many heroes of World War II from so many countries, heroes both sung and unsung. I wish I could honor them all for doing their best to keep the world free. If you enjoy our stories here at 1001 Heroes Podcast, please do take a moment to share our show with others and leave us a review. Reviews help new listeners decide to give us a try. Your Spotify comments to our episodes help as well. Thanks so much for being listeners and fans of 1001 Heroes, Legends, Histories, and Mysteries. We'll be back soon with a brand new episode. Until then, everyone, stay safe, and we'll see you then.